So welcome. Do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience?
Hi, my name is Sky Careful Danger Dragon. That is my full name, my real name, and the name the government and God know me by. It's pretty great. My pronouns are whatever pisses you off the most. They them is fine. I prefer any neo pronoun. Like, if it will make Republicans say that the liberals are going too far, go for it. My gender is very weird, and I am very weird, and it's cool. And yeah, I kind of think that about sums me up as a person.
And so what kind of an artist do you describe yourself as being?
I generally just use the word artist because I kind of do a bit of everything. I draw, I paint, I sew, I embroider, I write, I knit, and I've done poetry. I'm teaching myself ukulele right now, like you name it, I've probably tinkered with it at some point. So I generally just kind of go with artist. I think it's the most comprehensive.
And so what piece did you want to talk about today?
Okay, hold on, let me go get it actually. So this, for our friends listening, I'm showing a small painting I did. This is a painting I did. It's of a message in a bottle. It's not quite done yet, but I'm pretty proud of how it looks so far. And it's, I actually did it earlier this morning because I was listening to. So, are you familiar with the movie The Rescuers, the Disney movie with the mice?
No.
Okay, so it's this Disney movie and it's got these little mice, and the idea is that they're part of a rescue society and they go and they try to rescue people all around the world. And so the opening of this movie is a little girl putting a message in a bottle and throwing it into the sea because she needs to be rescued. And it's just got this really beautiful, like, instead of an animated intro, once she throws the bottle away, it just gets into these like beautiful oil paintings of a bottle at sea as it goes through all of its trials and tribulations. And the music is so beautiful. It's very much emphasizing how tiny this bottle is, which is a major theme in the movie, like how being very tiny in a very big world, like the mice. The main characters, the mice, like fight for their goddamn lives to get anywhere. And, part of that is fun creativity with the animation, but another part of that is because the person being rescued is a little girl, it's about being a little kid and being in a world like society is obviously not designed for children to navigate it, but think even just on like if you go to an art gallery, the paintings aren't at children's eye level, they're at the adult eye level. Nothing we do is set up for children. Like, even a children's library, a lot of the books are totally out of their reach. Fundamentally, as a society, we're not set up for children to navigate, and that's a little bit messed up. I think the United States is the only one of the only countries in the UN, possibly the only in the country in the UN that didn't sign on to the Convention of the Rights of the Child. And so the protagonist. Or well, the one of the protagonists, the girl being rescued, is a little girl named Penny who got kidnapped. And a little fun fact about me, I also got kidnapped when I was 14. My mom kidnapped me. I know we've spoken about it before, but for our friends listening to the podcast, my mom is kind of horrible. She kidnapped myself and my three younger siblings. I was 14. I was the oldest, and the youngest, my little brother Cannon, was six, I think. Maybe. Hold on. I was 14. He's 12 right now. I'm 19. That's 5 years apart. 14 years. Okay, he was probably closer to 8 or 9. No, wait, that's 7. Okay, yeah, he was 7. Yeah, it wouldn't have been his birthday yet. He was 7. Was he 7? He might have been 6. No, he was 7. I'm really good at math. I was the oldest. So what happened was my parents were getting divorced because, to boil it down, my mom is an asshole. She really sucked. And my dad spent a long, long time trying very hard to make it work. And it did not work because my mother would never capitulate, never compromise, and wanted unreasonable things constantly. And she was an abusive piece of shit. She gaslit everyone in the house. She hit all of us. And the emotional manipulation was off the charts. When I was 8, that was the first time I stayed home alone watching my siblings. And it's not reasonable to expect an 8-year-old to take care of a bunch of children. And when I was, as I got older, she just started leaving me home alone with them longer and longer and longer. And there would be days where she was just out of the house the whole time and I was watching the kids. It was not unusual for me to be in charge of the littles. I was given an extreme amount of responsibility at a very young age. And the way she kidnapped us was she got us all in the car, which, you're getting in the car with your mom, and she says, "Okay, you need to go pet sit for a friend." And this was not an unusual request. Sometimes we were just going to go do stuff, and I said, "Okay." So she dropped us all off at a friend's house and left, just left us there. Didn't tell us when she was going to come back. And then her friend actually came back to pick us up. And so we were all exhausted. I was tired. My phone was almost dead. I just wanted to go home. We hadn't had anything to eat or drink. We were just done, right? Been like 8 hours. So we all got in the car. I remember it was a smaller car. I was sitting in the front seat. I had these big black headphones on. No, I wasn't even in the front seat. I was in the middle, in the back. I think my younger sister Violet was in the front seat. And I had Beckett and Cannon, my younger brothers, on either side of me. And we got in the car, and my mom's friend, Julie, started driving. And it was as she was on the. We all thought we were going home, right? Like, all right, weird fucking day, whatever. We're gonna go home now, and we don't have to deal with this shit anymore. So, my mom's friend took us. Oh, shit. Sorry, I was fiddling with my pen and I just fucking broke it. My mom's friend started going down the on-ramp to the highway. And this is when we were all kind of like, what the fuck? Where are we going? Because we didn't need to go to the highway. The house was right there. And it was only after we got up to speed on the highway so that none of us could get out that she told us where we were going. She was like, "Your mom has a new house and we're going there." And none of us were happy about it. I feel like that's a pretty reasonable thing to not be happy about. Like, hey, your mom has a new house. We're going there whether you like it or not. But Julie actually yelled at all of us and told us that we were being ungrateful. She was planning to get us a housewarming gift, but now she might not because we're all being so bad and ungrateful. And mind you, this is a bunch of kids. The oldest is 14. None of us have eaten in 8 hours. None of us have had anything to drink. We've just been alone all day. And now we're going somewhere new. And I, at the time, remember feeling responsible for the behavior and like telling my younger siblings to shush and feeling like I should have kept them under control. And we went to Walmart. We each picked out, and she made us pick out a gift under $5. I remember I got a sketchbook. I don't remember what the other kids got, but I got a sketchbook. And then we went to mom's new house. And it was okay, it's a house. And I don't think we didn't even get to go inside before my mom piled all of us in her car. And I remember I was in the back seat. And she drove us away. I think she met us. Yeah, we didn't even get to the house. She met us in the Walmart parking lot and picked us up. And then she drove us kind of to the house. And then for some reason, she just, at the time, I know what it was, but then she turned away and she took all of our phones and had us turn the location off. And that was when I realized, oh, my dad's here, because his kids are gone. And I later learned that she left him a really like shitty handwritten letter of like, "I'm taking the kids." Karen took the kids, and it was really fucked up. And she drove us to a park, and we'd still not gotten anything to eat or drink. None of us were happy. None of us wanted to do anything. But you know, she got us to the park. She kicked us out of the car. She was more or less like, "Go play." None of us wanted to go play. And when we got back to the house, I found out that she'd called the police on my dad because we saw the police in the driveway. And because there was no custody order, my dad couldn't do anything. She hadn't taken us across state lines, so nothing she'd done was illegal. And we didn't get to see dad for like 2 weeks until he got lawyers involved. And I can rem yeah? No, it wasn't handwritten. I'm pretty sure she typed it up and then printed it out. My little brother is here with me and asked me about it. So, when I went back to see my dad and I had some time to like process away from my mom, I actually called her and confronted her and I was like, "Dude, you fucking kidnapped us." And she lied to me. She didn't even lie. She gaslit me and said, "No, that wasn't what happened." And I'm pretty proud of myself because I was still, again, only 14 years old. I actually pressed her. I was like, "No, we got in the car and we weren't taken where we were supposed to be going. You kidnapped us." And she was like, "Well, I'm sorry Julie did it that way." And to this day, she still never acknowledged that she's kidnapped us. And anytime anybody brings it up, she gets really defensive. It was like, "No, it didn't happen that way. It didn't do that." And so I never got rescued. I rescued myself twice. I ran away from home once to go live with my dad, and then the second time I got kicked out. And I ran away from when I was 14, and I got kicked out when I was 17. It was right after my birthday. And also 3 days after the divorce was officially finalized, did not look good on her lawyers. Nobody was happy about that. The thing about the movie The Rescuers is that the little girl does get rescued by the mice, and she goes home and she finds a happy family because she was an orphan before. That's why she was so easy to kidnap. And she is given a happy family. So I latched on to that movie, even as a very young child when I was living in an abusive situation, because I wanted so badly to be rescued. Like, I wanted to be rescued so badly. You know that genre of like fan fiction where it's like, "Oh my God, my mom sold me to One Direction?" I wanted that to happen to me. I never read One Direction because I didn't care for the band. I never read real person fiction, but that's what I wanted to happen to me. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to be rescued. And I never really got to be. And that's, you know, okay, not everybody gets rescued. Sometimes you have to rescue yourself. And it sucks, though. And so I was actually talking to my partner about it and about the intro about the rescuers. And that's when, and this is a very small, it's 5x7, it's on a piece of poster board. It's when I painted the bottle. Kind of while I was thinking about that, I don't even know if as of like a representation, it's more of a thought, an expression of that emotion of feeling lost at sea and wanting to be rescued.
You're done describing it?
I mean, I guess it's an audio medium, so I can do a description. It is a small 5x7 portrait. It's a portrait style piece. It's a painting of a bottle with a wave kind of slapping. It's a glass bottle with a wave slapping against its side, and the background is like dark, stormy sea. Like the background is dark and gray and stormy, and the whole picture is in like blue and purple and green tones. All of it is very cool colors with some yellow in there.
So to talk about the work itself, you've described a lot of like symbolism in your work. But what do you want readers to see at first glance? What do you want to jump out at them?
So I'm actually planning to sell this piece as part of I'm a personal goal I have this summer is to fundraise for the ocean cleanup project, right? I don't know how familiar you are with it.
I'm a little familiar with it, but do you want to give us a little bit more detail?
Yeah. Sure, it's basically so the Great Pacific Garbage Patch and how all of the messaging about it in general is like, oh, despair, despair, despair. Look at what the ruin we've done to our planet. The ocean cleanup people are people who are cleaning it up. And it's working. It's working very well. And I want to fundraise for that because they've given me hope in a really dark time. They're not rescuing me, they're not rescuing the planet, but they're doing something. And so this is, I want to do a series of ocean-themed pieces. I'm thinking of doing a couple, like, message-in-a-bottle pieces to sell for around, like, 45, 50, 60 bucks. And donate that fundraising, and donate that money to the ocean cleanup. So I guess the first thing I want people to think of when they look at it is, like, sick, that's a pretty cool painting of a, like, a bottle in the ocean. Because, goddamn, I'm glad that I looked at that painting of a bottle in the ocean. Man, I should spend
Hell
money on
yeah.
that. I hope they appreciate, like, on an artistic level, I hope they appreciate the use of colors in it, because I'm not gonna lie, I kind of went off. It looks great. I mean, it's you can't see it super well, but there's a lot of, like, subtle greens and stuff in here, and it looks awesome. I'm very humble about my work. It's not easy being the modern Leonardo da Vinci, but I make it work. I make it work. So I hope they look at it and I hope they don't see a bottle that isn't going to make it. I hope they look at it and see this turmoil and the struggle and are okay with that, for lack of a better word. Like, I hope if they think about an ending to the bottle story, I hope they think it's a good one and they don't decide that it's going to be lost at sea until it's ground in the sand.
And so just to talk about the creative process that you go through, are there any rituals or routines that like set you in a creative mindset when you're making things?
Not really. Like, I just kinda sometimes I get hit with the making things bug and I need to just get up and make things no matter what's going on or what time it is. I like the ritual of sitting down to paint a lot. I get my brushes out of my box and depending on what I'm working with, I use like canvas paper. I'll tape that down using painter's tape. Sometimes if I'm using a canvas, I'll just prop it up. I got this drafting desk when I was younger, and it can tilt. So I'll clear everything off the desk so I can tilt it up if I'm using canvas. And for these little things, these canvas boards, I'm just sticking them flat right on the desk, and it's working like a charm. Sometimes I put on music, sometimes I don't. It really depends on how I'm feeling and what's going on.
And so let's talk about your inspiration and your emotion. How do you translate
Well,
personal experiences into your artwork? I know you just talked a lot about, first of all, your,
that personal
a
experience.
lot of that personal experience and also a lot of the inspiration for the piece itself. But how do you go about picking what form of symbolism you think works best for a piece?
It depends. Like, I was listening to the opening. I actually showed the opening of the movie to my partner because I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I was on the phone with them the whole time I was painting. And I was just talking to them about it while I was working. And I didn't even realize why I was painting it until I got to the middle of it. And I was like, oh, babe, I think I know why this movie speaks to me. And they started laughing. I love my partner very much. You know, just gotta sneak that in there. Not to be in a very happy lesbian relationship or anything, but man, do I love my partner. And it's been 3 whole years and we haven't even moved in together or gotten a cat. We've been taking it slow.
We love that for you.
It wasn't, I guess, for lack of... The symbolism is rarely intentional. I start doing something, and then I later realize that my subconscious was a genius. A lot of the time, you know how when you're cooking, you don't...
Yeah.
You're not, like, if you're making, like, spaghetti, you're not dicing up peppers and looking at them and going, man, this symbolism, these peppers slaps. You're just kind of making peppers. And then it's only once you've done the whole dish that you realize exactly what the peppers are adding to it. Like, you knew you had to put them in there. You knew it was important. But you couldn't envision the finished thing, really. You didn't.
Yeah.
It's like, it's following a recipe, but the recipe is instinct and experience. You know that it's going to turn out, or you hope that it's going to turn out. And maybe it will, and maybe it won't, but you don't really know. You know what you're putting in there, but you don't fully know why you're putting it in there until you see the end result.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. And I love the cooking analogy. You know, sometimes it's a little hard to stand things when they're on their own or to understand them when they're
they
on
make
their
no
own, but
goddamn
all together.
Sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Until you put them together and then suddenly you have
a dish. Suddenly it's like, oh my god. No wonder that thing exists. Thank you. Which is how I feel about most things except garlic, because garlic fucking sucks.
I think garlic pizza is great, though.
It's okay to be.
And so, to speak about the artist's life, does the art that you make ever surprise you? Has there been like a piece that's taken like a very unexpected turn as you were creating it? And how did that make you feel?
Basically, all of them. I never know what it's going to look like until it comes out, and half the time I look at something and I'm genuinely shocked that I did that with, like, my hands. It's like, oh, this sprang, I look at a lot of pieces of art, especially when I'm not done, like, after I've finished them and taken some space, and I almost feel like it sprang fully formed for me as Athena from Zeus, but they're... They always surprise me. I never really know how they're going to look. It's never imagining something. I have the very rough sketch of a thing in my head, and then part of the artistic process for me is it becoming.
I like that description.
The idea is the chrysalis and the and finished piece is the butterfly, but it still has to go through the whole ugly process of metamorphosizing.
Do you think that sometimes, if there ever is uncertainty about the way that your pieces are coming out, or like a lack of creation, or, you know, the moods that they're like inspiring you to feel, are there times that you kind of want to just turn away from pieces?
Oh, yeah. A lot of pieces go through what I call the ugly baby stage.
Yeah.
Where they're really ugly. And that's where I abandoned. That's where I abandoned most pieces. Like right now, this is still in its ugly baby stage. Like, look at that, the neck of that bottle. That is nothing. That's not a bottle. Like, what is that? It's a fucking abomination. Like, the clouds look all right, and I'm pretty proud of the water. But this bottle is at best a suggestion of a bottle. When you look at it too close, it starts falling apart. Like, look at that shit. It's nothing. Look at this ugly baby. No real bottle looks like that. It's too wide.
Yeah.
The neck is tight. It's again, it's an ugly baby. And I often have to give up. There was a piece I did with like some chickadees that I flat out just tore up and threw away because I hated it so much. I was like, no, this is terrible. This sucks. I quit. There's actually a piece. I believe it. Is it in here? Do I still have it? No, I think I threw it out. Yeah, no, I have pieces that suck all the time. Like, part of the reason I have sketchbooks is because I draw fast and loose and abandon a lot of things. Like, I was doing some figure sketches the other day, and one of them on here in the corner, this motherfucker, I just gave up on that guy. Walked away. That guy sucks. This one's a bit better. I was doing some figure drawing studies yesterday. And the thing about figure drawing is when you're going fast, you end up making a lot of ugly babies. Like, this one looks pretty good. This one looks pretty good. This one, ugly baby. Let's see. I have a lot of ugly babies in here because this is my sketchbook. This is my pen sketchbook. Let's see. Like, let me see. If something isn't working, there's nothing, there is absolutely no force on this earth that can make me get off my ass and finish it if it's not meant to be finished. So sometimes the surprises the piece are coming out are not good ones. And you gotta kind of just cope with that. And sometimes you cope with that by murder. It is what it is.
So, thank you to our guest, Sky Dragon. Do you have any last words?
I hope you know that I've been sitting here contemplating whether or not I should be like, fuck, penis, shit, balls, just to up the rating. So those are my last words. Write them on my gravestone.
Well, I certainly hope that does something for our ratings. Thank you so much for. Well, thank you so much for listening in, everybody, and thank you, Sky, for being our guest this week. I'm your host,
My
Vinny.
pleasure.
And it's been such a great time, and I'll see you guys next week on Muses and Moods.